This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings from the city by the bay here, San Francisco. Tom Hartman here with you. Friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. So great to be here. I finally made it. Plane arrived at 2:30 this morning, but I'm here and I'm awake. Three cups of coffee later. It's Friday. It's, as always, the first hour of our program. Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is his website. You can subscribe to his newsletter there as well. And Bernie Sanders, he is not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He's in the independent from Vermont, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives before he moved over to the Senate. I mean, in the 230-year history of the House of Representatives. And I think of Bernie as America's senator and always so glad to have you with us, Bernie. Welcome.
Tom, it's great to be with you. And if you fall asleep in the middle of the show, I shouldn't feel offended. Is that
no,
right?
No. And you've
and
done
I'll just
this
have to keep talking.
That's right. You've done this show enough. You could just grab the ball and run with it. Hey, the debates last night, I know you were running. You didn't get a chance to see them. I saw them. It just seems to me like it's more politics as sports.
But, you know, Tom, I know all of these guys, and I've known some of them for years, so I kind of know where they're coming from. But, and I don't have to watch all the debates. But these debates are exactly what you said. They are certainly not a format, not an opportunity for serious people to discuss the serious issues impacting the American people. They are a sports contest, and it's like a jab here and a jab there and a soundbite there and a joke over there. But you know what? The future of America and the future of the world happens not to be a joke and not to be a soundbite. We're dealing with some very serious problems. We need some very serious discussion about those problems. And I think the whole structure, media structure, regarding campaigns makes it very, very difficult for candidates to do that. And, you know, the Shorenstein Center for Press Politics and Public Policy, located at Harvard, recently came up with a study. They were studying the nature of media coverage of the campaign. And nobody will be surprised to learn that the overwhelming amount of coverage did not deal with the candidates' views of the issues facing the American people, but was kind of inside the beltway campaign gossip. It is polling. Who's ahead in New Hampshire today? It is money. How much money did Barack Obama raise in the last 3 months? It is gossip in the sense of one person attacking the other, or somebody made a slip of the tongue, or and so forth. Meanwhile, the collapse of the middle class and the growing disparity between the rich and the poor, well, we don't have an opportunity to discuss that.
If I may interrupt, that's the thing that really startled me, because my flight was delayed 5 hours last week. It was delayed 3 hours, and then I got bumped to another one that was delayed 3 hours, so I was 5 hours late. But the bottom line is I was able to sit in the frequent flyer lounge there at the San Francisco airport and actually watch all but maybe the last 10 minutes of the debate. So it kind of worked out good. And what amazed me was so many of the questions, and when Tim Russert did it last time, I would say all of the questions, or the vast majority of them, were basically frames of from right-wing and Republican talking points. And I don't recall a single question being asked that was essentially a Democratic talking point. You know, the world is melting down. What are you going to do about global warming?
Right, exactly.
Poverty. You know,
much more important than the answers that one gives are the questions that are asked.
Yeah.
And I often say, I've been in politics for a very long time. I was mayor of Burlington, Vermont for 8 years. I was in the House for 16 years. Now I'm in the Senate. And you know what? During all of that time, not one reporter has ever come up to me and said, Bernie, what are you going to do to eliminate poverty in America?
Yeah.
Gee, now why not? That's a good question.
That's a tragedy.
What are you going to do to make sure that every American has health care as a right of citizenship? That's a pretty good question. What are you going to do to end the immorality of the United States having by far the largest gap between the rich and the poor. What are you going to do about that? But those are questions that are somehow never
well,
asked.
Well, and in fact, the question, some of the questions last night were so Republican framed that several of the candidates, in particular Dennis Kucinich, his response to the question was, "I reject the premise of your question."
Well, that's right.
And
that's
which I thought was a
and that's right.
Very
Dennis
courageous.
Very often does that. I remember a few years ago, it was Ted Koppel. I'll never, because I happened to watch that debate. And the question is, when John Kerry ended up winning the nomination, but Dean was then ahead at the time. And the question was to Kerry, why are you so far behind in the polls? Behind what? Why is your campaign not going well? And Kucinich was made a very proper response that maybe instead of talking about polls or whatever, we might want to talk about issues.
Right.
But it's a very deep problem, which starts off with corporate control over the media. And these people work for the corporate media. They work for the corporate world. And they frame the issues. And if you go outside of the context of their questions, then you're thought to be part of a lunatic fringe.
Right.
And you can't be taken seriously. Why would you want to talk about eliminating poverty? I mean, gee. Or health care for all people. What's the matter with you when you could talk about, you know, some, you know, who knows what, you know, relatively minor point.
Right, illegal immigrants or
illegal immigrants is, you know,
or abortion.
And it's not new, but I think what the American people have got to demand is that candidates for the president, for the Congress, that the media addresses the important problems facing the American people. I mean, for example, we see on the TV every day the president telling us how great the economy is doing. The reality is the middle class is collapsing. The reality is since Bush has been president, 5 million more Americans have become poor. 8 million more Americans have lost their health insurance. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if one of these commentators during a debate would say to the presidential candidates, what are you going to do to end the disgrace of America being the only country in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people?
Mm. Yeah, indeed. Moving along from the debates, Iraq, global warming, Blackwater, there's a bunch of issues that you guys are dealing with in Congress right now.
A lot of issues. Just a few hours ago, there were two votes on Iraq, a Republican vote, and Harry Reid and Russ Feingold had a good amendment in there, which I supported. And that is to proposition that any more money for the war has got to contain language which starts bringing our troops home very shortly and has them all home by the end of 2008. This war, we're now into our fifth year. In March, we'll end 5 years of this war. 5 years of this war. We have lost close to 3,900 soldiers, 29,000 or so have been wounded, not to mention the tens of thousands more who are going to come home with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Tremendous casualties. There was a study that came out recently, which if you look long term at the cost of this war, which means if, you know, a soldier has lost his legs, we're going to be taking care of that soldier for the rest of his life. If somebody has a serious emotional issue as a result of that, well, we're going to take care of that soldier for the rest of his life. Long-term costs are now well over $1 trillion. Meanwhile, you have a president who says, oh, my goodness, I have to veto this labor and which we call here labor HHS, Health and Human Services bill. We can't afford to put money into education. We can't afford to put money into children's health care. Oh, my word, we just don't have that kind of money. Oh, yes, we can spend $10 billion every single month for the war in Iraq, over $1 trillion in total and counting. Money is still going up. And then you're looking at a military. I mean, you talk about some of the side effects of this war. You're looking at a military which is probably in the worst shape right now because of the degree to which they've been overextended that we have seen in decades. Recruitment, very serious recruitment problem. Officers, well-trained officers, are not re-enlisting. We're losing, eating up all kinds of equipment over there. National Guards all over this country don't have the equipment that they need because of the war. So this war has taken a terrible toll. And then you look at Pakistan right now, which is kind of unraveling, and you look at Afghanistan, where the situation is getting worse. We look at our standing in the entire world, where people don't want to work with us. We've got some real problems there.
Yeah, definitely. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Bernie will be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. If you want to drop by our live chat room, go to TomHartmann.com or AirAmerica.com. Click on the Tom Hartmann page. There's links to our chat room there and a whole lot more. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartmann Program. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Yes, indeed, and right here on the radio, Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Our phone number, 866-303-2270. Senator Sanders' website, sanders.senate.gov. Ours, tomhartmann.com and airamerica.com. Bernie, I know that you wanted to talk about global warming.
Right. I just want to say a few words on it, and then we can get to the questions. I am on both the Environmental Committee, which is now dealing with a global warming bill, and on the Energy Committee, which deals with energy legislation. So these issues are very much on my mind, as I'm sure they're on most listeners' minds. And the bottom line here is that we had better, as a nation and as a planet, get our act together, because what the scientists are telling us is that the situation is more dire, that global warming is getting worse at a rate that they had not anticipated, and that Congress is going to have to take very bold and aggressive action to cut greenhouse gas emissions at the very least by 80% by the year 2050. And that's the bad news. But the good news, Tom, and I've been just working on this quite a lot in the last couple of weeks, is that if you look at the potential for solar thermal, and that means not just photovoltaic rooftop units, but if you look at the potential of the solar power plants, which we're beginning to build in the southwestern part of this country, Nevada, California, there is huge potential there, the potential of wind. I just got off the phone this morning with a manufacturer who's making small wind turbines that are on the market now for $12,000 that in some cases could produce 60-70% of the electricity that a home needs. And if we can have the government provide the tax credits and the other types of incentives, we can move very aggressively towards sustainable energies like wind, solar, geothermal, and in the process, create millions of good-paying jobs, not to mention the need to rebuild our rail system, which is so far behind the rest of the world, make sure we have public transportation in rural areas. I know that in the state of Vermont, for example, many parts of rural Vermont, people have no choice but to use the automobile because there are no decent bus services in those areas. So there's a lot of potential out there to make our country more energy efficient and move to sustainable energy, and that's what I think we've got to fight for.
Well said, and I'm so glad that you're out there doing that. Let's pick up some phone calls here. Robert in Clifton, Tennessee, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Senator. I have utmost respect for you, but last week you mentioned that 52 times the Republicans had filibustered Democrats' bills. But I submit to you that the American public knows nothing about any filibusters, because raising of a hand or nodding of a head does not communicate that to the public.
Robert, you're absolutely right. I mean, in a sense, it almost gets back to the point that Tom and I were talking about a few moments ago in terms of how the media covers presidential campaigns. If I'm not mistaken, there will be a record in terms of the number of filibusters that have been waged this year. And what people don't understand, and the media does a very poor job in explaining it, is we don't vote. We this morning had a key vote. You read in the newspapers tomorrow there was a vote on Iraq. There was not a vote on Iraq. There was a vote to see whether we could, in fact, vote on Iraq. The vote was, could we summon 60 votes to end the filibuster so that we can then proceed to the vote? We did not succeed.
Why doesn't Harry Reid then say, okay, guys, you want to have a filibuster? Have a filibuster. We'll sit back and wait while you talk.
Well, Tom, that is a very good question, and I think you may, if I have anything to say about it, see more of that. What Reid would tell you, and he's trying his best, is he has a huge agenda. He has a farm bill that he has to get done. He has a global warming bill that he has to get to the floor. So he has, you know, many appropriations bills that he has to bring to the floor. But I happen to think that if our Republican friends want a filibuster, I think we should let them filibuster. I think we should stay down there and let us have this debate so that, as Robert points out, the American people can understand what obstructionism is all about. This is what I think. I think Bush understands, and the Republican leadership understands, that their agenda is extremely unpopular. Bush's will probably go down in history, not only as maybe the worst president we ever had, but as the least popular president. So if that's where he is, he only has his base left, his small base left. And he's not going to go anyplace. So what is their theory? Their theory is, look, we are very unpopular. What we have got to do is make sure that we put the Democrats in the same position that we are. Let's stop every initiative that they have. And we can assume that the media will not give it the kind of coverage that it should have. That's where their strategy is, and I think Robert is right in saying that the American people don't probably fully understand that.
Right, but in part they don't understand it because Harry Reid hasn't turned it into theater.
And I think that's a fair point. And in fact, if I have anything to say about it, you will see us doing a better job in making sure the American people understand that.
Indeed. We have about 20 seconds here before we have to take a break. So how can Americans encourage senators and Senator Reid to take on the Republicans like this?
I think the truth is you can have an impact when you call up your senator, when you call up your congressman, when you write letters. And I think we just don't get enough of those letters and phone calls.
So call your great. We put up a website called callcongress.org that has all the toll-free numbers.
And I urge people. I really do urge people to. It makes a difference.
Great. Good to know. We'll be back with your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment here on Air America on the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And, Bernie, let's head back to the phone calls, okay? Dean in North Dakota, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Sanders, I have a lot of respect for you. I'd almost move to New England to be able to vote for you.
Thank you.
I'm kind of concerned about the FCC. They're getting way too much power. Everything's appointed. They're not listening to anybody. Mergers that are taking place that should take place are not taking place. Things that shouldn't take place are. Internet control, it looks like it's going to be a fact of life. And I've written to congressmen to the FCC till I'm blue in the face. And I just wonder if there's anything else that can be done. Do you have any oversight over that or any way that you can do something about it? And second point is, being an over-the-road trucker, I cannot understand how state highways or interstate highways, which are built with tax dollars, can all of a sudden become toll roads of enormous amounts when you get down to it. And I'd like to know if there's anything to be done about that.
Well, that's it. Stay on the as you drive around the country, you're finding that some of the lanes, the fast lanes, are only available if you pay an extra fee. Is that the case? Yeah.
It's getting there, but it's just mostly just plain toll roads, and it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of money.
Okay. It's the privatization of the commons.
Yeah. You've asked two very good questions. I happen not to be on the Commerce Committee, which has oversight over the FCC, but this is an issue that we will play an active role in. Like every other agency of the Bush administration, you have an FCC which is much more concerned about corporate profits than they are about the needs of the American people. And one of the issues, and we've talked about this on this show before, and it's been around now for a couple of years, and we've got to be vigorous in opposing it, is the effort on the part of the FCC to so-called deregulate the media even more than it is now. And what that means is it would give even fewer media owners, i.e. Those people who own newspapers and those people who own television stations, the ability to have that ownership in certain types of markets, giving just a handful of people huge power of what people in the community see, hear, and read. And we are going to be working very, very hard to make sure that that so-called deregulation does not take place. We need more media diversity in America. We need more viewpoints. We need more local control. We need more local music rather than having just a small number of international corporations controlling what the American people see, hear, and read. So that's an FCC issue of huge consequence. I should say that in my state, the state of Vermont, and in other states as well, you're looking at a situation where Verizon Wireless wants to purchase Unicell, which would give them a monopoly situation, virtual monopoly in the state of Vermont. And the FCC is going to rule on that. And I have strongly opposed that because Vermont would then find themselves in the worst of two worlds, a monopoly situation, which is obviously a disaster, and an unregulated monopoly, which makes it even worse. So we are opposing that and demanding that Verizon, if this agreement goes through, provide universal service all over the state in every geographical region, that they provide the technologies that all cell phone users require, and some other conditions as well. We're working with the environmental community, with the business community, with the consumers of the state to make sure that that happens. So the caller is right. FCC has enormous power. It's a corporate right now. It bends very strongly in favor of the corporations, and we've got to work on that. In terms of toll roads, I mean, that raises the whole issue of infrastructure in America, and the fact that if the federal government is not stepping up to the plate and helping states and cities rebuild their roads, what is happening is bad and regressive forms of revenue are being raised, including tolls. So we are going to be working on a major transportation bill, which hopefully will address some of those issues.
Well, and a lot of it is because we're selling our roads off to companies from Spain and Italy and France.
That is right.
And, you know, and privatizing the commons.
You got it.
And that's a terrible thing. Just real quickly, Bernie, I noticed that, is it Kevin Martin or Kevin McMartin?
Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin, who's the head of the FCC, he's a Republican appointee.
Yes.
Just recently, he's been making noises about taking on the cable companies, which has got them all freaked out. And there's been several articles about it in the paper recently. Suddenly, on this one issue of regulating cable TV, he's actually seeming to take a relatively progressive position. What am I missing here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we will see.
Yeah.
Let's hope okay. that is what it appears to be. In terms of cable, I can tell you I have always voted against the telecommunications bills when I was in the House. This idea of deregulation, which allows in most parts of this country for people to end up with one cable company,
right.
Who can then charge any rates that they want. And what we have seen is rates for cable have soared in recent years.
Yeah, indeed. Vaughn in is it Pleasanton, California?
Pleasanton, California, yeah. Good morning. My question is, how realistic is it to expect that you can actually change, say, the energy policy or the transportation policy when everything you do, it gores somebody's ox? I mean, if you went solar and wind to any significant portion, coal miners would be out of job, the railroads would decline because they depend on the coal revenue, that kind of thing. And if you did it too slow, we'd be out of business and China would rule the world by the time it got done. If you do it too fast, everybody would be out of job.
Well, that's a very good question, which requires an answer that would be longer than I have the time to give you right now. But obviously, the first issue that we have to deal with is what happens if we are not aggressive in terms of reversing global warming. Think about what it will mean not only for the environment in terms of increased flooding and droughts and major weather patterns such as hurricanes and tornadoes, not only in terms of quality of life, but just in terms of economics, what it would mean having to rebuild cities that are flooded or destroyed by tornadoes, or the loss of drinking water, or the loss of agricultural land. I mean, you're talking about a huge economic factor. So I think we don't have a hell of a lot of choices here. I think we have to deal with global warming, or else this planet is going to suffer irreversible damage. That's number one. Number two, in terms of jobs, I happen to think that while there will certainly be economic dislocation, you are going to gore somebody's ox. But at the end of the day, net, you're going to create more jobs than you lose. As I mentioned earlier, if we retrofit our homes, you can create a whole lot of jobs doing that. If you are building wind turbines here in the United States, if you're building solar plants and photovoltaic units, if you are rebuilding our rail system, the gentleman talked about rail. Yeah, well, you may lose some coal business, but you know what? You can gain a whole lot of passenger business and cargo business if we're breaking our dependency on the automobile and giving the people a rail system which is clean, as efficient, as comfortable. It gets cargo from one end of this country to the other. I see a lot of jobs being created in rail. So at the end of the day, economic dislocation, yes, I think you have no choice but to move forward very aggressively to deal with global warming because the planet hangs in the balance. And thirdly, I think you create more jobs than you're going to lose.
Yeah, and the ox that most often gets gored is the corporate ox, and that's, you know, as Blue in Missouri in our chat room points out, an American power company with close financial links to George Bush has been named as one of the world's top producers of CO2, global warming pollution. Southern Company in Juliet, Georgia, emits more carbon dioxide annually. This is one company's power plant than Brazil's entire power sector. It's one of the top two of America's dirtiest utilities and the sixth worst in the world.
Sure, and these guys have a lot of power, the coal companies. ExxonMobil, of course, has been funding these foundations and organizations that are trying to mislead people without global warming. So, we're going to have very powerful opponents, no question about it. But I think the American people understand we don't have a choice. If we're going to save this planet for their kids and grandchildren, we have to move aggressively on global warming.
Amen. Dennis in Alexandria, Virginia, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Dennis?
Yes. I'm calling in reference to regulation of credit card companies. I have an 86-year-old mother who had about an $1,800 bill on her credit card with an introductory rate of 6%, and unbeknownst to her, it's ballooned to 29%. Isn't that considered usury?
You got it. Dennis, this is an issue I know something about because I used to be on the House Financial Services Committee, and we worked on it and put legislation in to stop just this. What your mother is the victim of is these solicitations that come to the mail, and I think I've mentioned this before on the show, Tom. Do you know how many solicitations the American people get from the credit card companies in a year?
I remember you telling me and my being boggled, but I don't remember.
Last I heard, it was $4
billion. Yeah.
Can you believe
it? I told you, my cat got one.
Yeah, and you know, kids get them.
My cat signed up as a Republican. I mean, I use him as a surrogate name sometimes, so that's probably why. But
well, you know, every household gets bombarded with these things, and they have on the, you know, the front of them in big print, 0 interest, 2%. You got to read the fine print. It is thievery. It is a ripoff, and some of us are trying to. It's a bait and switch, and we're trying to end that so that people like your mother doesn't get ripped off.
Yeah, or my cat.
There you go.
Higgins, you know, we got to take care
29%. Of 29%. There you go.
There you go. 45 minutes past the hour. Senator Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today from K-Green, the KGRN, our affiliate in San Francisco, California, where this afternoon at 3:30, from 3:30 to 6, I'll be at the Little Fox Theater in Redwood City. For information, you have to have tickets for this thing. For information, go to green960.com. and you can sign up for it. And I look forward to seeing our many friends from the Bay Area here this afternoon at Little Fox Theater. Also, tomorrow I'll be doing two book signings at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in Carmel. That with KRXA, our affiliate up there, and or down there, I guess it is, from here. And on November 29th, Los Angeles, 7:30, Barnes & Noble in Santa Monica. So put that on your calendar. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. His website, sanders.senate.gov, and 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Craig in Berkeley, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, how you doing? I got a couple things. Number one, the anthrax investigation that I haven't heard anything about lately, and everybody seems to have forgotten about. And also the Amero and the North American Union. Do you know anything about these things?
Well, I think, like many other people, I have not heard all that much about the anthrax investigation. The North American Union is, I guess, the effort to try to bring Canada, Mexico, and the United States closer together into one entity. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's he's gone, but yeah.
Yeah, well, obviously it's not anything that I am sympathetic to, and it's part of this whole so-called unfettered free trade agreement, which is being pushed upon our country and other countries by large multinational corporations. And these things are not free trade. They're really free investment opportunities. And the end result is that in almost every country, what you see is a growing disparity between the rich and the poor. It is interesting, you know, Tom, that in Mexico now, a reasonably poor country, which since NAFTA has lost over a million farms, the small farms that couldn't compete with American cheap corn. You know who now? There's the guy from Mexico, Mr. Slim, S-L-I-M, telecommunications guy, is now the richest person in the world.
Right, the power of monopoly.
Yeah, he
essentially controls the cell phone industry in that country.
Not only in that country, but in other countries as well. One person is worth over $60 billion in a poor country like Mexico,
which
is just extraordinary. And you're seeing that in the United States. You're seeing that all over the world. That when you have unregulated free trade, when you have these agreements which cut back on the kind of role the government can be playing in healthcare, education, in nutrition, in protecting jobs for the people of a given country, as often as not, you're going to see a disparity of wealth being created. And
which is just what they want.
Sure, that's what it is all about.
Yeah.
And so we are going to, you know, fight to make sure that trade agreements that the United States enter into, and trade is a good thing if it's a well-articulated agreement, that these trade agreements work for working people in this country and not just for the CEOs of large corporations. It is beyond belief to me that you're seeing these large multinationals investing tens of billions of dollars in China, but they're not investing in the United States in creating decent-paying jobs here. And then they're building up China. They're building up China's defense with new technology. And then we spend huge sums of money on all kinds of armaments, which are certainly not designed to fight Al-Qaeda. Well, who do they design? Who are the aircraft carriers and the submarines designed to fight? Well, maybe China. I don't know, interestingly enough. So
it's a tough one. Mike in Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
You talking to me?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Mr. Sanders.
How are you, Mike?
Good. I was just wondering, this is kind of a two-part question. Now, first of all, would you agree that senators and representatives, they make a pretty good salary right now?
Yep.
All right. Now, would you either introduce or back legislation if it were to be introduced that would eliminate health care benefits for life for the politicians once they're out of office? You know,
well,
Mike, you're entitled to it while you have the job. Once you're out of that job, you no longer get it.
Seeing
what most Americans are faced with, if you ain't got a job, you ain't got health.
Okay, Mike, you don't get it. I mean, that's not accurate.
After two terms? You don't get it after two terms?
No.
No. There's a Republican email, viral email running around about how wonderful, Bernie, you guys in the House and Senate have all this health care and all these millions of dollars in benefits and, yeah. and you know, Social Security. Instead, you get these huge blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Yeah. I know. This goes around. I mean, the salary is a very good salary. The health care benefit, by the way, which is a good benefit, is the same benefit that the postal workers get.
Yeah.
It's a federal health insurance program. Well, what I will tell you, Mike, is that I want to see, at the very least, I believe in a national health care program. And I can tell you, when I was mayor of the city of Burlington, I had a better health insurance program, as did all city workers, than I have as a United States senator. But at the very least, every American should be entitled to the same health care that members of the United States Senate get, the same program. I would surely support that.
John Edwards has come out and said that if he's elected president on January when he gets inaugurated, he will make the statement that all the members of his cabinet and all the senior members of his administration will lose their health care. They'll have to go out in the private sector and buy it on their own if they want it. They will lose their health care if by June of 2009, his first year in office, the Congress has not passed comprehensive health care for every single American, period. What are your thoughts on that, Bernie?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think it puts pressure on the Congress to do the right thing. And as I've indicated, I would go further than this, but at the very least, every American should be entitled to have the same health insurance program that members of Congress have.
Yeah, amen, amen. Well said. As always, a great hour. Senator Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us, Bernie.
My pleasure.
And let me remind people, sanders.senate.gov, the website. And once again, thanks to Bernie Sanders. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on a whole variety of topics. I'm particularly curious your thoughts on the debate last night. Some interesting things came out there. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. Anything Goes Friday here. We'll take your calls on any topic you'd like to talk about, from psychology to science to politics. In particular, I'm curious about your thoughts on the debate last night. It seemed to me that, you know, a number of the candidates did a good job of trying to bring things around to the real issues. But there's been just this incredible lack of questions in all of the debates, in my opinion, about the issues that really matter, or at least the framing of questions in ways that would be consistent with the democratic and the liberal worldview. Instead, the questions are phrased in a conservative context or in a, I don't know, kind of loosey-goosey media context. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. Brenda in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Brenda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I would like to know if you agree with me or disagree with me. I think it's strange that the audience last night was not asked to hold their applause until after the debate, and that they were not only allowed to applaud, but they were allowed to heckle and boo. I haven't seen anything like it. And I thought the crowd was supposed to be largely undecided voters, but they certainly seem to be suspiciously pro-Hillary.
Yeah, I noticed that. There were clearly a lot of Hillary Clinton partisans in the crowd, and I don't know the answer to the question. I'm guessing maybe somebody can call in who does. As I said, my plane was massively delayed. I got in here at 2:00 in the morning. I woke up this morning just in time, basically, to roll into the studio, and so I haven't. Usually I do hours of show prep before I go on the air. I haven't had an opportunity to read, you know, the Daily Kos and Think Progress and Common Dreams and Op-Ed News and Buzz Flash and all the other, you know, great blogs out there to see if anybody has any insight into this. If anybody does, give us a shout, because I was struck by that as well, and I honestly don't know the answer to the question. But thanks for raising it, Brendan. We'll see what happens. We'll see what kind of response we get. And if not, probably by Monday we'll know. Deborah in Albany, California. Hey, Deborah, welcome to the program.
Good morning, and thank you for all your work. In the debate, Barack Obama responded specifically to a question about Social Security, that he would lift the 96,000 income cap for collecting the Social Security tax, and I believe Hillary interjected some objection to a large tax increase on the middle class, Obama said very clearly that only 6% of Americans earn more than $96,000. And I believe that we need the Dems and progressives to repeat over and over definitions of income levels instead of just the tired reference to the top 1%, because I think that Americans have been sold this bootstrapper's illusion that we're all in the middle class and that we mustn't tax the rich because, by God, we're going to be rich one day ourselves.
Right. No, Hillary had that deer in headlamps look for just a moment when Barack Obama responded to her by saying, you know, the people with an income over $100,000 a year are only 6% of the American population. I don't get why you keep, you know, referring to this as the middle class. And he was so right, and she had no response for it, as I recall. And I don't mean this as a, you know, I'm not trying to be particularly partisan here, but you're absolutely right. And the meme that Hillary was using was, you know, let's not go after the middle class, let's not raise taxes. And that's the meme that the Republicans have historically used, and Democrats as well, frankly, conservative Democrats, the DLC Democrats, to get the average working person to oppose tax cuts that are going to hit people who are making over a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, over a couple of million dollars a year. I mean, you know,
exactly.
really, it's not just the top 6% who are making over $100,000 a year, or the top 3% who are making over about $200,000 a year, or the top 1% who are making over $300,000 a year. It's really the top 1/100th of 1% who are making over $1 million a year. I mean, we're talking a very, very, very small fraction of America who have succeeded through these think tanks and through their infiltration of the media. And frankly, the fact that every media person who has moderated any of these debates is part of that top 1/10th of 1% who makes over $1 million a year. And so, of course, they're going to frame questions in their own economic self-interest. I mean, all of the commentators, yeah, all of them, these people are millionaires. There's just, you know, there's no way around it. And so, you know, they're going to portray themselves as average people, you know, sort of like, yeah, there's one particular conservative talk show host who goes out of his way to talk about, you know, his family and his back porch and his SUV and his blue jeans and whatnot. And the guy will not travel anywhere for less than $50,000 on a private jet. You know, it's like whoa. And I mean, this is the same kind of thing that these politicians are doing. And you're absolutely right, Deborah. And it's well said. Thank you very much for saying it. That we need to be talking about the median income in the United States, the midpoint income. 50% of people making less, 50% of people making more. As I recall, is $47,000 a year. If it's not exactly that, it's within a few thousand dollars of that, and that is the middle class, and that means that that means half the country is making less than that, and the half that's making more than that isn't making much more than that. So anyhow, Brian in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Brian, listening on KKZN.
Hey, Tom, I'm concerned about the fact that we kill our own people and other people over in the Middle East. And I'd like to ask that people, when they get the chance, when they see the names of the military people, we don't, of course, have option to see all the names of tens or hundreds of thousands, however many there are of the Iraqi civilians, but the newspapers and different websites, they'll publish the names of the military and their hometown. And when I see those, I read their names out loud and I read their hometown, and I think we need to recognize those people, and it's the least we can do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well said. Thank you very much, Brian. By the way, just also one of the things I observed in the debate last night, I just want to toss this in real quickly before we go to the next call, is there was a moment when John Edwards was, as I recall, it was John Edwards, was listing some of the failures of Hillary Clinton in his opinion. And her response was, you know, he's slinging mud like a Republican, which is name calling. It is framing and name calling. Very elegant stuff. You know, maybe she read my book. I mean, you know, I talk about how this stuff works and how it can be done and how to hopefully use it for good, you know. But there's no way to respond to that. I mean, you know, how can you respond to somebody? You know, it's sort of like, you know, as Richard Nixon famously said, "No, I'm not still beating my I don't recall if he said dog or wife, but whatever it was." You know, I mean, how do you? Somebody says you're slinging mud. No, I'm not. I'm talking about your record. No, you're slinging. And I was interested to see in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning that was the top of the story, was that Hillary is accusing Edwards and the others of slinging mud and behaving like Republicans, which is a meaningless abstraction, and yet at the same time, powerful, powerful, powerful stuff, because it goes right to the gut and it establishes a frame around the other candidates that it's damn near impossible for them to escape from. So she's either she's one brilliant politician or she's got a bunch of them advising her or both. Janet in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Janet.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, great. I have two important points. You were talking about the cap on that Brock brought up, the cap on
yeah, you need to turn your radio off if it's distracting you.
Okay, hold on one second. Sorry.
Yeah. We will wait a second here for Janet. not much more. And always when you call in, please turn off your radio because there is a slight delay. Okay, Janet, your point.
She had a response to that question. She said she was protecting teachers and firefighters. So is that the kind of money they make?
Well, if you have a firefighter making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, depending on the city they live in, or maybe $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and you have a teacher making a similar salary, arguably they might make more than $96,000 a year, in together, maybe $105,000. but no, she, you know, if you're talking about lifting, if you're arguing against lifting the cap on Social Security so that everybody pays the same percentage. So that the percentage that I pay and that you pay, Janet, is the same as the percentage that is paid by Warren Buffett or Bill Gates. You're protecting the millionaires and billionaires. That's the bottom line. And Edwards and I think a couple of the other candidates, I believe it might have been Barack Obama, I'm not sure, have suggested, well, let's stop at 100,000 and then pick up again at 250,000. So we really are, you know, hitting the millionaires and billionaires rather than the people who are on the upper end of the middle class. I think that's, frankly, bowing to the political realities of it. But, you know, it's...
Well, there's just one more thing. Were the booze orchestrated like the question that was asked her a week ago?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know the answer, but maybe somebody will.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Welcome back, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. We're going to drop into our live chat room, TomHartmann.com or AirAmerica.com. Click on the Tom Hartman page, and you'll find links to that as well as articles on democracy and attention deficit disorder and all my latest book, Cracking the Code, all kinds of cool stuff. Patsy in Faircrest, Washington, listening on Talk 1090 KPTK. Hey, Patsy, what's up?
Oh, I just want to mention this. I've been watching all the debates, both Republican and Democrat, and I noticed that when the Republicans are having their debate, their questioning is pretty even. But, for instance, last night, Hillary had 16 questions and was able to respond 6 times. Obama had 11 questions and was able to respond twice. But Edwards had only 8 questions and was able to respond twice. Kucinich, 8. Byron, 10. Richardson, 12, was one response, and Dodd, 9. Now, why are they starting to cut Edwards out?
Because Edwards is the guy who has spent his entire life taking on big corporations. And the questioners on that stage are multimillion-dollar paid. You know, they're very wealthy media stars who are in the employ of and beholden to very large corporations, and the very kinds of entities that tremble at the thought of John Edwards, because he literally spent 20 years of his life taking them on, and as these candidates accumulate money, those corporations, the media corporations, know where that money is going to end up. The vast majority of it is going to end up in their pockets. And so whoever's the most effective fundraiser is going to get the most money. I was astounded last night when John Edwards attacked Hillary Clinton for taking lobbyist money, and the audience booed. I mean, it shocked me. It shocked me. I thought, you know, what, have we got an audience full of Republicans here? I mean,
yeah,
it's just, I was astounded.
I was, too. It was just, it's really bothering me. And in poor percentage, they don't even give them a good shot at anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Patsy, thanks a lot for the call. Frank in New York City. Hey, Frank.
Hi. I would submit to you regarding the Social Security thing that in Terre Haute or Tulsa or Toledo or wherever, 96 is a lot of money. But if you're a New Yorker or San Francisco, the way you are today, it barely keeps your head above water. And I can't help but wonder if instead of yelling at each other, these people ought to be considering solutions, like perhaps a donut somewhere in that.
Well, that's what John Edwards proposed, was after...
Yeah, I did hear you propose that. And I think that makes more sense. I think my problem here is that the Democrats once again are forming their circular firing squad,
yeah,
and they're taking easily debatable, simple solutions, and they're using them to pick off each other instead of dealing with the real problems that the Republicans are creating for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, Frank. Thank you. Fred in Los Angeles. Hey, Fred.
Well, you know, you ask about why that last night debate was odd with the audience participation and questions, and you yourself answered it yesterday when you said that it was sponsored by the coal industry. Now, it's obvious when you manipulate the media through staging a debate and asking lopsided questions and getting all these people to, fire at each other, it's going to help your cause. And that's what the coal industry wanted to do. They wanted to shut down John Edwards because his whole career was part of the sniping of them. They were successful. The Dennis Kucinich asking, Wolf Blitzer to, frame his questions more properly, gave us a little bit of an idea how lopsided things were.
Yeah. Dennis, again, playing his role of being the truth teller in the whole thing, you know, the kid who says, and not to call him a kid, but that's how the story goes, who said that the emperor wears no clothes. And Dennis Kucinich has spent his life doing that, and God bless him for it. James in Coventry, Connecticut. Hey, James.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. I truly believe that Hillary fears Edwards, along with the corporations, based on the two questions or the statements about the mudslinging and the Social Security. She called it a play right out of the handbook. And then when Edwards say, "No, you're playing with numbers, it's only 6%. And she, you know, for the past few years is saying, roll back tax. She's, that's a tax hike.
Yeah.
A play right out of the Republican handbook.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was Obama who rebutted that. But
yeah,
you're right.
It was Obama.
You're right. I mean, the fact of the matter is, James, that Hillary Clinton ran against two no-name Republicans when she ran for the Senate in New York State, and she had huge name recognition. And Obama ran against Alan Keyes. And for either of these two so-called front runners to say that they have, you know, demonstrated their electability when neither of them have had a serious election battle in their lives, Obama perhaps in the House, you know, when he was in the Senate in Illinois, I don't know the details of that, but at a federal level, neither of them have ever had a serious battle for election. And they want to take on the Republican machine, I mean, one of the most vicious and powerful and extraordinary and well-funded machines in the history of the world, frankly. And, John Edwards, on the other hand, took on the Jesse Helms machine. He ran against a strong Republican and beat him in a state that is largely Republican in South Carolina. And I just think that that's a testimonial to his electability. I've said that before. I guess I'm singing that song perhaps too much. So we'll leave it at that. 27 minutes past the hour. Back to your calls. 866-303-2270 right after this.
Is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, live from San Francisco, where this afternoon at 3:30 we'll be at the Little Fox Theater in Redwood City here on Green 960. Green960.com, the website. And you can check that out. Tomorrow we'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in Carmel, California. And on the 29th of November, we'll be in Los Angeles in Santa Monica at the Barnes & Noble Bookstore in Santa Monica at 7:30 p.m. on the 29th. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, Sharon in Tualatin, Oregon. Hey, Sharon.
Hi, Tom. You know, I always, almost always agree with you, but you've got...
What?
Edwards and Obama started the month slinging last night, and they were each booed many times, and there's some good reasons for this. Obama was comparing Hillary to Romney and Giuliani. Edwards was talking about her lobbyist monies when he takes hedge funds. Hillary simply answered those accusations by asking them to...
Well, hang on just a second. There's a lot here. My understanding of Edwards and hedge funds is that he's invested in one, not that they're supporting his campaign.
Okay, I may be wrong about that.
You know, the guy's got a lot of money, and he's got it invested. Some of it is invested in a hedge fund, which is wise investing in some cases. But mudslinging. You use the word mudslinging.
Yeah.
Why is it mudslinging to raise a candidate's issues and positions?
Well, the way they address it, okay, to me, they're not addressing it as an issue. They're addressing it directly to Hillary.
I agree with you. If somebody campaigns, we'll bounce back and forth here, Sharon.
Okay.
I'm not going to cut you off.
Oh.
If Barack Obama, and I didn't see that part, or if I did, I missed it. I mean, I was in an airport frequent flyer lounge, and it was kind of crazy. But if Barack Obama compared Hillary Clinton to Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani, I would agree that that is mudslinging.
Mm-hmm.
If John Edwards says that Hillary Clinton has taken two sides of an issue on the same day, I would say that's talking about the issues.
Right.
But it was John Edwards that she accused of mudslinging, and I never heard him compare her to somebody else unfavorably. I never heard him diss her in the abstract, which is what mudslinging is. Every time he took her on, it was about the issues, and yet she used that phrase against him. That concerns me.
Okay, my turn? Okay.
Your turn.
Okay, I agree with you on that, and I don't think Edwards slung as much mud as Obama did. And yes, he did. I've got it on tape. He did compare Hillary to Romney and Giuliani, which really disgusted me. But what I think happened with Edwards, even though he did, like you said, he dressed it in a different manner, I think he got caught up in it as far as the perception by the audience, because they were both booed over and over again. The thing is, people out here, I mean, Hillary simply answered that accusation by saying in a blanket statement, stop the mudslinging.
Yeah.
Edwards did stop, okay? After that, Edwards never said another negative word on stage. Obama did. He kept going. They were booed because, you know what, Tom? We are all so sick and tired of it. All we want to do is hear what each of their plans for our country are. And to me, especially Obama, he looked more like a Republican last night than anybody, because that's their game. Is tearing each other apart. You know what I mean?
Well,
sick of it out here.
And at the same time, as a candidate, your first imperative is to differentiate yourself from the other candidates. And there are really two pieces to that. One is to say, here's what I'm for, and the other part is to say, and here's how I'm different from the other guy.
Well, now see, that's great. I totally agree with that 100%. But Obama especially, and Edwards sometimes, instead of stating it like you just did, here's what I stand for, and here's what the other guys up here are saying about this, this, and this. Instead, they direct it, first of all, directly at her.
Mm-hmm.
They use her name constantly. And if you notice, when Hillary's speaking and when Biden's speaking, and Biden and Richardson standing up for Hillary last night just wowed me,
mm-hmm.
They don't say it. They don't say, Biden would never say, and Richardson did this, this, and this.
Right.
He says, on this issue, here's how I stand. And you'll hear him say, Hillary, Richardson, even Dodd will all say, here's how I stand.
Yeah.
Now, we have people up here who don't agree with me, and this is their plan, but here's my plan.
So you think, Sharon, if I can kind of cut to the chase on this, and there's a whole lot of other people who want to get in on this.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. My sense of what you're saying is that the booing was not because there were Hillary partisans in the audience, but because, by and large, people are just over the circular firing squad stuff.
Absolutely.
And they want to get on with. Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Shirley,
Yeah. And I want them to sound like politicians, not kids in the schoolyard.
Well, let's have them sound like statesmen and women, you know,
yeah.
rather than even politicians.
That's
well
true.
Thank you very much,
thank
Sharon.
You,
I appreciate the call. Jerry in Northern Michigan. Hey, Jerry.
Hi. I believe I heard Richardson last night saying that he was all for renewable energy. Now, I think wasn't the debate basically funded by the coal industry anyway?
Yeah, it was sponsored by the, quote, clean coal, the so-called clean coal industry, yes. And that this is a question I raised yesterday, was are any of these candidates going to take on the so-called clean coal industry? And I noticed that Barack Obama was talking about how he supports nuclear power, which gave me the creeps. I didn't see much else. Again, I didn't see the whole thing. I missed the first 10 minutes. I missed probably the last 20 minutes. And sitting there in the United Airlines red carpet club is, you know, people were going by and people were talking and whatnot. But I think I caught most of it. But I didn't catch what Richardson said about coal. What did I miss, Jerry? And what did the other candidates say about this?
I kind of caught it just out of the corner of my ears. I can't really say it verbatim, but he was basically saying that he's for renewable energy, like wind and things like that. You know,
right.
Stuff that's going to be polluting, he's not all that much for.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good on him.
I did have a question, though. Do you know of them ever finding the $2.3 trillion that the Pentagon reported they lost on the 10th of September of 2001?
No, and that's an additional trillion, by the way. It was about 6-8 years ago that the Pentagon announced that they had lost $1 trillion, and now it's up to $2 trillion, and they have no idea where it is, and apparently no plan to find it. So I think you might want to talk to Dick Cheney and his old buddies at Halliburton about some of that. But no, to the best of my knowledge, there's not even a serious investigation going on about it. Jerry, thanks for the call. Lonnie in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Lonnie.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. And I want to thank you for inspiring me to re-register as a Democrat. I got out of the party because I was so angry at Nancy Pelosi for not bringing impeachment to the table. And I really, for quite a long while, up until very recently, have believed that Hillary Clinton has basically bought the nomination. I think she's rigged the machines. And through your discourse on your show and other shows, it made me realize, like, if I don't at least try, I'm going to make her steal my vote. And, you know, last night watching her, honestly, her eyes, to me, reminded me of George Bush. She's got that evil look, like, when they were...
Oh, Lonnie, come on. I mean, we can disagree with her on policy, but...
I think she's right up there. I think she's just as deceptive, just as lying. She will smile. She's a she-wolf. You know, I don't know if you've ever worked in a law office, but she's the kind of woman that will... And when people were... when they were on the stage kind of calling her on her own stuff, she gave them that look like, oh, buddy, you don't even know what you're up against. And, you know, that's why I re-registered as a Democrat, to keep her from being president.
That's interesting. Well, Lonnie, thank you for sharing your observations. I'm not ready to go that far. I disagree with Hillary on the policies, on many of her policies. I agree with her on many of her policies as well. And I'm very concerned with all the money she's taking from lobbyists. But that doesn't, you compare her to Rudy Giuliani, who is a thug and a known associate of mafiosa and a liar. I mean, you know, blatantly. Or any of the other Republican candidates, for that matter. And I'd vote for her in a heartbeat over any of those guys. Robin in San Rafael, California. Hey, Robin.
Hi, Tom. I listen to you every day. I think you're just great, but I disagree with you about Edwards. I was originally for Edwards, and I think he seems increasingly desperate as he's been kind of eclipsed by the rock star status of Obama. And Hillary has really won me over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know,
In contrast to our last caller.
Yeah, and I think she has proven that she can, she won by 65% in her second term.
Mm-hmm.
And that means she won a lot of Republicans over in upstate New York, and she works well with the Republicans in Congress. You know, people have apologized to her for how they treated her when she was in the White House, and I think she's learned a lot. I think she'd be a much better president than her husband ever was. And I think one of the big problems with Edwards is that, you know, I think I'm a realistic progressive. And I think if Edwards were elected, He would have no team to enact any of the more progressive ideas he has. I don't think.
Well, neither did Franklin Roosevelt when he was elected. You had a very conservative House and Senate.
I don't think he's a Franklin Roosevelt. And I think that part of the reason you and others think he's electable is because he's a white male.
I think America, certainly misogyny is alive and well. And there are some Americans who will not vote for a woman or who will not vote for an African American. But I don't think that that's the decisive factor in this election.
I don't think so either.
And as I said, I'm not anti-Hillary. I'm more pro Kucinich, pro Edwards, pro Obama, pro Dodd.
I don't know. Maybe we'll win you over because I'm really pro Hillary.
Well, you may, Robin. And like I said, if she wins the nomination, I will be pro Hillary. 45 minutes past the hour. Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, fair and slightly unbalanced. Robert in North Hollywood, California. You're on the air, Robert.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great, but I'll get better. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Listen, I thought Biden really stole the show. Every time that he debated, he shows he's got a... Back when he was talking about not worrying about Iran because Pakistan had so many more nukes than Iran, and he made that comparison in the last debate, that was just phenomenal. And then last night... He just shows his knowledge and his professionalism, and especially his understanding of foreign affairs.
Yeah, I've met Joe Biden, and I've been in a small room with him giving a talk on foreign policy, and I am incredibly impressed by Joe Biden.
Right, and then I'm sorry, Obama pulled a Hillary last night, stumbling and not making a decision. And I tell you, Kucinich, he lost my respect last night with his understanding that they should give driver's licenses to illegal immigrants and that there are no illegal persons. That's a bunch of BS, in my opinion. And as much as I hate Cheney and are convinced that he orchestrated the 9/11 events, I have nothing to do with Kucinich anymore. I don't think that these Democrats realize that non-Republican, Democrat, progressive liberals like myself, we want an answer to the illegal immigration problem. And it's not to give them any kind of authority or rights. It is, in my opinion, to move them all back to wherever they came, and if they want to apply legally, they can. And that's not an impossible thing to do.
And in fact, that has been the progressive position in the United States since the 1880s, when the unions started fighting back, when the railroads were importing labor from China to break the railroad unions. And I mean, Cesar Chavez led a march back in the 1960s down to the Mexican border to protest illegal immigration because people were coming up and busting the United Farm Workers Union. That historically has been the progressive position. And I think that it's really going to come back to bite Democrats in the butt if they don't get with the program, which is why last night when that question was asked, you know, should you give driver's licenses to undocumented workers or illegal aliens? John Edwards said no. Hillary Clinton said no. I think Chris Dodd said no. Pardon?
Biden.
And Biden said no. And Dennis, went off on this thing that I think is just political suicide. I mean, look what happened to Elliot Spitzer. His approval ratings are below 25% now in New York State. I was just in New York earlier this week, and it's all anybody's talking about is, this guy's dead in the water politically.
I'm sending an email to Kucinich and said, you are such a fool. You lost my support as much as I hate Cheney, as much as he needs to be impeached. You are such a fool. I do have one complaint with you, Tom, because I respect you so much, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in Santa Monica on the 29th. But, Tom, unless you can answer this question, you need to put a lot more emphasis that 9/11 was totally rigged by Cheney. Unless you can show me how a 757 could fit into a 16-foot hole in the Pentagon, then that means that there was no 757 in the Pentagon. And you've got Jamie McIntyre, the first correspondent at the Pentagon, reporting live on CNN saying, I don't know what they're saying. There is no plane here. There's no fuselage. There's no tail section. There's no wing section. There's no dead bodies. The only pieces on the ground you can pick up with your hand.
Robert, I absolutely agree that there are a million questions that need to be answered. I mean, probably literally a million questions that need to be answered, and that's one of them. That doesn't necessarily mean Cheney was behind it. It doesn't mean he wasn't. My position is we need to have a serious investigation. And what I'm seeing is a grassroots ground-up serious investigation, just like there was into the Kennedy assassination, where every year for 40 years in Dallas, there's been an annual meeting of the, quote, Kennedy assassination nuts. And I've been to many of those meetings. And, in fact, when we were writing our book on the Kennedys, we got a lot of very, very valuable information, met a lot of wonderful people, people who collaborated with us and people who gave us information, people like Peter Dale Scott and others who I have tremendous respect for. But, you know, I don't think any of us can make definitive statements other than that, A, the official story is not the story, and, B, we've got a hell of a long way to go before we're going to have any clue at all about what really went on. But, Robert, I'm not going to go on the record pro or against Dick Cheney or whatever. I mean, you know, being involved in the thing. Because I don't know, and neither do you. I mean, it's the bottom line. We need to find out, though. I absolutely agree with you. We need to find out. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve.
Tom, I couldn't be prouder of you as an American citizen with your knowledge of history and your knowledge of what we're up against. But I did hear you apologize today for believing in a guy like John Edwards.
I apologized?
You sort of did, and that's the only reason I've called. I don't normally call radio shows, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of threats facing the United States and, you know, our nation. But the biggest one is not terrorists. And it's not misogyny, it's not, you know, xenophobia. It's really the corporatocracy, the oligarchy, it's corporations. And John Edwards is probably the most qualified guy, I think, with the kind of track record you laid out.
Oh, you're taking me on. At the bottom of the hour, I remember I was going off about something I liked about Edwards, and then I said, I guess I'm starting to sound partisan here, and I need to back away from that. And
I disagree with you.
The reason I said that is because the position I've been trying to take, and I've been trying to be a fairly honest broker in this stuff, is to allow all voices on this show and to not specifically and explicitly endorse anybody or condemn anybody, but just, you know, to share my opinions.
I have a concept. It's not the individual you vote for; it's the direction, the overall direction of. You know, the possibilities for the future that people as Americans should be voting for. You know, it's not a popularity contest. I really would love to see a woman president. I'd love to see an African-American president.
Me too. I think the country is ready for both, frankly.
And, you know, frankly, to be honest with you, probably, you know, having women presidents might, as a mandatory thing, might not be a bad thing for the country. Running out of time, but, again, main issue facing America is how to
deal with corporate power. Yeah, no, I got it, Steve. I got it. And thank you for the call. Anything Goes Friday. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our number 866-303-2270. Drop by our live chat room at tomhartman.com or airamerica.com. Broadcasting live today from San Francisco.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Welcome back to our third hour, 6 minutes past the hour. Lefty in the chat room points out, I keep saying that Edwards represented South Carolina. In fact, he represented North Carolina. I stand corrected. Thank you. I can never keep my Carolinas apart. I never lived in that part of the country. Well, actually, I lived in Atlanta for years, but they don't much in Georgia talk about the Carolinas. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything Goes Friday here. Bonnie in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hey. Earlier in the show, you were saying that Hillary's comments about Edwards mudslinging, that he really didn't have anything to come back with, or what could he come back with. And I didn't watch the debates, but when I first heard these clips, I was thinking what he should have come back with was, if he had the opportunity, I don't know what the format was because I didn't watch it, but if he had the opportunity to respond, I wish he would have said something like,
criticizing Hillary's record is taken from the All-American debate playbook, whereas her voting record is taken from the Republican-liked agenda book, is what I would have liked, you know, to hear him come back with something.
Yeah, although that would have been perceived as more mudslinging. My recollection is that he did respond, and he said, I'm just talking about her vote and the differences between us on the issues. The whole evening was kind of maniacal. I was waiting for a flight that was delayed and half paying attention to 16 different things at the same time. Your point is well taken. I mean, here's the problem. If any time that you say that in generalities, when you attack another person in generalities, you attack them on their personality, you compare them with somebody else, things like that. That really is mudslinging. When you say specifically, this person says that we should not raise the cap on Social Security, and therefore that millionaires and billionaires should not have to pay Social Security taxes like the rest of us, that's not mudslinging. That's talking about the issues. And my point was that I thought that Hillary's comeback was politically brilliant and morally deficient, because I didn't perceive Edwards as mudslinging. Now, we have another caller who says that Obama was comparing her with Republican politicians. That I would fall, I would say that falls into the category of mudslinging. But Bonnie, thanks for calling and raising the issue. Rob in North Carolina, want to change the topic to hemp?
Yes.
Go for it.
All right. Well, I just want to admonish you a little bit, because you're the voice in the wilderness. And anytime anyone talks about biofuels, it should be your responsibility to remind all of the listeners that hemp is the best producer of
hemp. I do every time, Rob. I did yesterday. Pardon?
I was listening yesterday, and you were talking to someone, and I was waiting for you to say, don't forget hemp. You know, they were saying something, they mentioned switchgrass or something like that. Or
I mentioned hemp yesterday. I mentioned hemp. As I recall, maybe I just intended to, but I'm quite sure I did. I'm absolutely clear that if you want to create diesel in North America, the best crop for that is hemp, and they're growing it in Canada, and it's spectacularly successful. And if you want to generate gasoline, corn is one of the worst crops. You want, you know, there's sugar cane is probably the most effective. You know, half of Brazil of their autos are running mostly on sugarcane based ethanol, and it's not taking land out of food production.
I'm reading that hemp is four times better producing than sugarcane.
Sure, it probably is. And now as they're hybridizing it and getting it more and more, you know, raising the oil content. Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, that's just taking the oil from the seeds. In addition to that, you can make cellulosic ethanol out of the stems and the leaves. So, which very few people are doing right now. Most of the hemp is simply being, you know, they're simply pressing the oil out of the seeds. So, I mean, we've got a long way to go in this technology to improve it, but as it is, hemp is way ahead of everything else. And that's why we need to change the laws on that here. And Rob, I mention it as often as I can, and I will continue to, because you're absolutely right. It is a big deal. Danny in Wenatchee, Washington. Hey, Danny.
Hello, Tom. You know, I, after watching last night, I'm doubtful that I'll even watch any more of these things. They've turned into a media circus for the personalities of the media trying to outshock the last debate format. And what I would like to see, at least during the primaries, is like Air America, and particularly you, because I think you're a competent moderator, devote the 3 hours to inviting the candidates on to discuss an issue, one issue, for instance, health care. And, you know, if there's six candidates over a three-hour period with commercials and whatnot, they might get 7-8 minutes an hour. Maybe.
Danny, we have invited most of the candidates on this program. The response that we've gotten from some of them has been that they will only come on if they know in advance what the questions are going to be, and I don't ask follow-ups. I think the perception is that they have everything to lose and nothing to gain. And it may be an accurate perception, by the way, at that. I think it's a great idea. I know Mark Green tried to put this thing together some time ago, you know, at Air America, or I believe that was the case. Something like this, you know, a presidential primary debates on Air America Radio, not just on my show, but across the network. and give each candidate a few minutes to talk and things like that. And it just didn't work out. I mean, Dennis Kucinich has been on this program. John Edwards is on two or three times. John Edwards has been on this program twice, maybe three times. His wife has been on this program. I'm not sure. It's been a while since we had Joe Biden on about a year ago, but I don't think he's been on since he's been running. I remember just 2 weeks ago we invited Chris Dodd on twice, and it just, you know, they said it was schedule problems. I'll take them at their word. So, you know, I mean, we're doing our best here, but these campaigns are so finely tuned, you know, so they're so calibrated, they're so careful, they're so cautious, and there's so much about making sure that they've got control of the venue and that they know that they're dealing with friendly folks.
Exactly.
And I'm not a multimillionaire media personality who is, you know, unlike many of the folks who on television, who's afraid of losing his job if he goes against corporate interests and therefore is going to be sucking up to particular types of questions or candidates. And I think that frankly intimidates a lot of these candidates, although, you know, I might be giving myself more credit than is due. Maybe they just don't think that progressive talk radio is, you know, they're just taking our vote for granted. I suspect many of them are. But, Danny, your point is well made, and I appreciate it. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Just great. What's up?
Well, you were talking yesterday about why the media keeps pushing Hillary Clinton
mm-hmm.
as the heir apparent, you know,
right.
to be
the presumptive nominee, yeah.
And could it part of it be laziness on their part, on the media's part, because pretty much all their work is done?
It could be. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the Republican Party has been pushing Hillary Clinton for the better part of 2.5 years. It was almost 3 years ago, I believe, that I had on this show Dick Morris with his book Hillary versus Condi Rice. And the one time I've ever had a guest actually hang up on me and refuse to continue a conversation. And my recollection is that was 3 years ago. I mean, it was quite some time back. But for a long, long time, the Republicans have made it fairly clear, and Paul, I'm getting terrible feedback here, but I think for a long time the Republicans have made it quite clear that they want to be running against Hillary. So, Tim in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Tim.
Hey, good morning, or afternoon. Two things happened while I was watching that debate last night, and the previous caller talking about that he's not going to support Kucinich kind of illustrated that for me. And listening to your show is a wonderful synthesis of, like, all the millions of people that watch that show, and we all have a perspective, and we get to learn different things. Even from what we saw last night. I mean, my perspective has already changed just by hearing everybody else's talk. And I appreciate you giving us the opportunity. First thing was, the gentleman that dumped Kucinich said he dumped him on one particular issue, and that was giving driver's license to immigrants.
Right.
And apparently he stopped listening after Kucinich said that, because what Kucinich said, which is the real solution, was getting rid of NAFTA, CAFTA, and all these free trade agreements.
Right, which is one of the things that's driving, to some extent, illegal immigration into the United States. And I always warn people, don't be a one-issue candidate. I mean, it's just America is bigger than one issue.
Well, the whole debate was set up that way.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it feeds into the soundbite culture. It feeds into the whole media thing of, you know, what's going to be the flag that we're going to raise today? What, you know, where are people going to take shots across the bow? Who's going to hit the knockout punch? And you know, those kinds of things. It's a sad commentary, frankly, on the level of discourse and quality of discourse.
I did the same thing when Don said that, of course, security trumps human rights. And I wish Kucinich would have said, we need to secure human rights.
That's right. Human rights, security does not trump human rights. I'm sorry. You know, give me liberty or give me death. Remember that? Death is the absolute failure of security. And here's Patrick Henry saying, give me liberty or give me death. Human rights totally trump. We're going to do a progressive pop quiz right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Okay, here's what we're going to do, my friends. A Tom Hartman Program presidential straw poll. Right now, if you are calling because you want to go on the air about an issue or discuss something in depth or whatever, call back in 6 or 8 minutes at the bottom of the hour. But for the next 6 minutes, what we're going to do is call, give us a call at 866-303-2270. We've got the caller ID here. It shows up the zip code or the area code of the callers. I'll call out your area code and throw you on the air, and you just tell us, if the Democratic primary were held today, for whom would you vote? Who would you vote for? And including conceivable write-ins. Don't waste a vote on Higgins, by the way. He probably is a Republican. So you will hear, the way it'll work is you'll hear the phone ring and ring and ring and ring. Nobody's going to answer it. It'll ring and ring and ring. And when it is answered, that's me. You're on the air live. And simply, you know, give the name and then, you know, I'll move along. So that's how it's going to work. We're going to do that from now until the bottom of the hour. And then we'll tally them up and let you know what came out of it. So area code 941, who would you vote for? Okay, you got to listen to your phones instead of the radio too. Area code 585, who would you vote for? Hello? Okay, let's try another one here. Area code 707, who would you vote for?
Joseph Biden.
Okay, Joe Biden. Area code 206, who would you vote for?
I vote for John Edwards.
Okay, I've got a blocked caller ID here, but I think you heard the whoosh. Who would you vote for?
Joe Biden, 91307.
Great, thank you. 206 area code, who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. 602, who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Okay, 917, who would you vote for?
Tom, I'll vote for John Edwards.
John Edwards, thank you. 720, who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Okay, 212, who would you vote for?
Hillary Clinton.
Okay, 201, who would you vote for?
Who would I vote for? John Edwards.
Thank you. 949, who would you vote for?
Edwards, but I'd prefer Gore Edwards.
Okay, great. 586, who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Thank you. 619, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 413, who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, I've got a blocked one here. Who would you call for? Vote for?
Senator Barack Obama.
Thank you. Barack Obama. 425, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
John Edwards. 650, who would you vote for?
Hi. I'd vote for Kucinich and Edwards.
Okay, thank you. 515, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 305, who would you vote for?
Edwards.
Area code 973, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 718, who would you vote for?
Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. 412, who would you vote for?
Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. Area code 253, who would you vote for? 253?
Hi.
Okay. Area code 206, who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. 602, who would you vote for? Not working. Area code 360. Our number 866-303-2270, by the way. Area code 360, who would you vote for?
Barack Obama.
Okay, thank you. 678, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 801, who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Thank you. 248, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
623, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 805, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
702, who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you very much. Area code 310, who would you vote for?
Barack Obama.
Thank you. Area code 312, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 217, who would you vote for?
John Edwards, unless Gore ran, then it would be Al Gore.
Okay, great. We'll count that as a mark, as one for each. 206, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 412, who would you vote for?
Barack Obama.
Thank you. 303, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. I've got a blocked call, but you can hear that you're on the air. Who would you call? Who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Thank you. 928, who would you vote for?
Barack Obama.
Thank you. 347, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Okay, thank you. Area code 732, who would you vote for?
Asbury Park loves John Edwards, baby.
Okay, thank you. Area code 714, who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 503, who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Blocked one, but you're on the air. Who would you call? Who would you vote for?
Ross Perot.
Ross Perot. Okay, that's a novel one. Area 360. Who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 516. Your vote. 516. You're on the air. Who would you vote for? Okay. Here's another 516. Who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 515. Who would you vote for?
John Edwards.
Thank you. 336. Who would you vote for?
Mike Gravel.
Mike Gravel. Thank you. 985. Who would you vote for?
Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. 718. Your vote?
Obama.
Thank you. 805. Your vote?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. 805. Your vote?
Leon Panetta.
Okay, 602, your vote. 602?
John Edwards.
Thank you. It's area code 651. Who would you vote for?
Edwards Kucinich.
Okay, great. We'll list one of each. 818, who would you vote for?
Whoever's in place to beat Clinton.
Okay. So none of the above, I guess, except Clinton. 303, who would you vote for?
Boulder, Colorado, voting for Barack Obama, baby.
Thank you very much. I got a blocked call here. Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, 610, your vote?
Al Gore.
Al Gore. 707, your vote?
Hello?
Yeah, your vote?
John Edwards.
Okay, 818, your vote? 308, your vote? 308, your vote?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll tally them up and give you the total right after this.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Sue Nethercutt, who runs our chat room, reminds me that it was the 3rd of November 2005 when Dick Morris was on this program suggesting that the Republicans wanted Hillary Clinton to be running for president against Condi Rice and that he wrote a book about it. So that's almost, you know, to the week, 3 years ago. That's been going on for some time. Again, it's not Hillary's fault. Here's the results of our Tom Hartman Show Progressive Straw Poll. Our official unofficial results, but this is actually how the callers called in. You might have been keeping track too. But Marcus in New York did a great job of marking it down. And John Edwards won with 26 votes. Dennis Kucinich came in second with 15 votes. Barack Obama came in third with 7 votes. Hillary Clinton came in fourth with 4 votes. Biden and Gore tied with 2 votes each. Mike Gravel, Ross Perot, and Leon Panetta all received 1 vote. So again, real quickly, 26 for Edwards, 15 for Kucinich, 7 for Obama, 4 for Clinton, 2 for Biden, 2 for Gore, 1 for Gravel, 1 for Perot, 1 for Panetta. And this is quite consistent and has been for... Gee, I'd have to, maybe Sue knows, she keeps track of these things better than I do, but it seems that we've been doing this for at least 5 or 6 months, and the results that I'm sharing with you here seem quite consistent with past results. I think that, by and large, it's always pretty much come out that way. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Back to normal phone calls. Dave in Fremont. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. First, thanks again for being America's civics professor and educating us so well. Second, looking forward to seeing you again at the Fox Theater this afternoon.
Great. Yeah, it should be a hoot. And for our listeners in San Francisco, 3:30 at the Fox Theater, but you've got to go to green960.com first and sign up.
I want to explain the situation. I work for a large multinational corporation and recently started getting internal memos encouraging us to donate to this new corporate PAC that's been set up, which obviously is set up to lobby for the advantages of the corporation. That triggers 2 questions. Do you think that that's a... We've never been solicited before, so do you think that's a sign of corporations trying to flex their muscle since they now pretty much own the government? Or do you think it's more an act of desperation since they believe a change might be coming with a Democratic administration?
I don't know. I'm not even sure that it's legal.
I mean, a lot of us are feeling pressured. You know, they have a disclaimer saying you don't have to, but it
right. But we're keeping track of who does.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the other side of that is it seems like, you know, do I have any rights to push back, try to educate the rest of my colleagues that there are there's an alternative to what that PAC is doing? And
right. You know what I would suggest, Dave, because I don't honestly know the answers to those questions. I know if you're a federal employee, that's a crime. In the private sector, I know that there are some boundaries that have to do with specific political activity.
Right.
But this may, you know, they may have had, I'm quite sure they had their lawyers vet this thing and all the language is exactly legal and all that kind of thing. But you might want to call the local AFL-CIO office because
yes.
they know about this kind of stuff, even if your company is not unionized and you're not a union member.
Right.
And share the story with them and ask them their advice.
Okay.
So, and then let us know. You know,
yep.
give us a call back in a couple of days and let us know what happens.
Oh, and thirdly, I did hear you mention hemp yesterday. So.
Yeah, okay. I thought I did. Yeah. I thought I did. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate it. Tom in Los Angeles, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. It's morning out here. So I have a question regarding economics and specifically the housing slump or the credit crunch. And, you know, I've heard that a solution the Fed uses to temporarily, I think it's ease liquidity, if they inject $41 billion into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, how do they do that? By what mechanism or vehicle? And if there's no known one, can I volunteer? I'll take the money and I promise to spend it all.
Well, see, the way Franklin Roosevelt injected money into the economy was he made the government the employer of last resort and created good jobs that people could actually raise a family on through the WPA and the CCC and things like that. And built roads and built bridges and built national parks and that's frankly the most, in my opinion, the most solid way for government to inject money into the economy, because then it's going in at the bottom, it's going to work its way up eventually, and it's going to create demand.
And it's productive.
Yeah. With regard to the Fed, the way that money is created by and large in our economy is this, and I say this with a caveat of I'm not an economist and I'm not an expert on this stuff. I think I'm fairly well read, but I stand subject to correction. I mean, somebody may call in and say, no, that isn't quite right. Here's how it works. And we, you know, from time to time we have people like Ravi Batra on to explain this stuff to us. But my understanding is that with fractional banking, the way it works is that when a bank has, you know, say, I believe that 10% is the threshold right now that is required in the United States. So if a bank has $100 in deposits, then they can loan out $1,000 against that $100. That the remaining $900, that extra $900, was literally created out of thin air. So our banking system is creating money out of thin air. One of the ways that the banking system is encouraged or discouraged from creating money out of thin air has to do with the Fed making initial money available to those banks and determining the interest rates at which the Fed loans is at which banks loan money to each other, the overnight lending rate, which actually increases or decreases the cost of money, which encourages or discourages banks from making loans. Now, there's probably another piece to that I'm missing, because I read that article too in the Wall Street Journal where they said, in one day the Fed dumped $41 billion of liquidity into the market, and my initial assumption was that somehow the Fed I thought that the Treasury Department did loans, created T-bills and T-bonds and things like that, and which is essentially the government running the printing presses, and I'm not sure how it relates to the Fed, frankly, and hopefully somebody who really understands economics, you know, this macroeconomics at that level, can call and answer the details of that question, because I don't want to just completely get it wrong and confuse everybody. But it's a great question, Tom. So we'll see. We've got another 20 minutes here, and we've got hopefully many years on this program to figure out the answer to the question. Appreciate the call. Thanks, Tom. James in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, James.
Hi. How are you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Okay. Well, I was thinking that a fair way of taxation that would go across the board, kind of a holistic way of doing it, might be to take out taxes electronically, because I think every transaction these days has an electronic component. And so if it was constantly being taxed every time money was being transferred or used or deposited, it would be a fair way of distributing the taxes across corporations and people and individuals. And then maybe if you needed to fine-tune it, you could have rebates for people who aren't making enough and were being taxed.
You know, the problem is that we're not yet a cashless society, and frankly, I hope we never are. But what you're describing is something very similar to the value-added tax, which is very popular in Europe and is in use in a lot of other countries around the world, where at each stage along the chain of production, every time value is added to a product, there's a tax on that. So when you mine iron out of the ground and you convert the dirt into iron ore, there's a tax because you've increased the value of it. And then when that iron ore is sold to a steel factory and they convert it into steel, there's a tax on that. And these are all very small incremental taxes. But every time value is added, a percentage of that value is taxed. So, you know, if $100 of value is added, then there's a 3 cent tax, you know, a three-tenths of 1% tax or something like that, or 300, whatever the math is on that. And then when that steel is made into the door panel for a car, there's a tax on the adding of value to that because it's now more valuable than it was before. And then when that door panel is added onto the car, there's a tax on that. And then when the car is sold, there may or may not be a sales tax because there's been all these taxes all along the way throughout the entire chain of manufacturing. And there are a lot of arguments in favor of the value-added tax, the main one being that it's a relatively invisible tax. Most taxpayers don't realize that they're paying taxes. And it allows governments to reduce income taxes, to somewhat reduce corporate taxes, and it actually is taxing productivity. It's actually taxing the increase in value. It's taxing true economic value. The argument against it is pretty much the exact same argument, and that is that it's an invisible tax, and therefore governments can get more money, and those people who think that governments shouldn't exist and shouldn't have money are generally opposed to it. But I think that a value-added tax actually makes some sense in the United States, and it's something that perhaps we should consider. There have been a few proposals, but by and large, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and all the corporate guys just freak out. But thanks for the call. Interesting thought. Jerry in the Bronx, New York. Hey, Jerry, we got about a minute before a break. What's up?
Yeah, I'm calling about the caller of last hour who denounced Dennis Kucinich because he suggested giving driver's license to illegal immigrants. But seems to me, whatever we decide to do about these illegal immigrants, whether we accept, have some form of acceptance of their presence, or we decide to hunt them down and throw them back into Mexico, it's to our advantage to keep track of them. And if you give them driver's licenses, that's a good way of keeping track of them.
Yeah, and that's the argument that Elliot Spitzer made, and it makes some sense. And by the way, there's a third option, from the ignoring to tracking down to amnesty. And that is simply not to give them jobs, which I think will cause them to...
Oh, well, Kucinich, another caller.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jerry, we're out of time.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue. For me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto, Lauren Kirshner, Marcus, I'm not sure I know your last name. Pop it in there for me, would you? Chris, somebody? And go ahead. Great, thank you. And Clark Reed here in the studio and Bob Agnew at Green 960. Our advertisers, our sponsors, Michael Toth, who does our archives, Sue Nethercutt, and all the folks in our chat room. Thanks to all of you for making this show possible. I do truly appreciate it. And another thank you. Well, let's see, what was it, Wednesday night, I think, or Tuesday night? I did a book signing at the Strand in New York City, and it was videotaped by Book TV. By C-SPAN, and the guy Michael, the guy who does Book TV, has this incredible blog and this incredible thing. For 16 years, he's been doing street theater about homelessness, and I meant to mention it before. It just came across the paper in my pocket here. The Rags, R-A-G-S, show. So there's two S's in there. The Rags Show .blogspot.com is Michael's blog, and great guy. Not only is he a cameraman for C-SPAN, but he's a performance artist and doing marvelous work and has been for you know, well over a decade and a half. I think it's just great. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Victoria Jones on the line with us from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I am just great, but I will get better. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Pretty well indeed.
Well, it is, it's an interesting day as, really everything winds down except, of course, the Senate not winding down as we're going to be having these pro forma sessions during the recess, which is Senate Majority Leader Reid's way of making sure that the President does not do any recess appointments over the break. The President was widely expected to appoint a number of people, including possibly James Holsinger, who would be appointed to be Surgeon General, and he's considered extremely controversial for the post. I did, in fact, ask Tony Fratto, in fact, during the briefing, because at that time it was so recent that Senate Majority Leader Reid had actually made the statement that I wasn't even aware that he'd made the statement. I asked whether Holsinger would be appointed to that position, because Tony Fratto would not make any statement of that. But so we will not have any appointments over the break.
So Harry Reid's definitely going to do this.
He has put out a statement to that effect.
God bless him. That's great. Okay.
Yeah, so there will be non-voting sessions every 3 days. And now exactly how this is going to work, I don't think people really know. But
I think they just have a couple of people show up. You know?
Basically, yeah. So a couple of people are not going to be terribly happy about this, but that's
well,
how
you've
it
works. You've got senators who probably live, you know, who represent districts in Maryland and Virginia, if nothing
yeah,
else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Jim Webb can drive over there, you know, take an hour.
But I'm saying, yeah, exactly. It doesn't take any time to just zip in. Exactly. It's not a difficult thing to do. Then, of course, I don't know whether you've been talking about the story of John C. Rood, who was nominated to be Under Secretary of State for Arms Control and International Security, which is a position that had previously been held by John Bolton. Now, his Senate confirmation stalled because Joe Biden and Richard Lugar objected to his nomination, and then by a whole different kind of maneuvers, President Bush is now apparently, or at least his officials are now boasting that they have outmaneuvered the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to install him in this position at the State Department. At least this is what the Washington Times is saying. And this is something that's not going to be going down terribly well, but they feel that they've done this, and they've managed to make him in as an acting person. So we're going to be basically having an awful lot of acting people in positions, people who do not require Senate confirmation.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you know, it's really nothing new for this administration, actually, and all these empty positions. The Justice Department's probably the best example of it, but it's happening at state as well. There's so many of these eight branches of government, these agencies that are not well-served, not well-staffed. And it reflects, I think, the perspective of the Bushies, well, of the conservatives, of the Republicans in general, that they just don't like government. Yeah.
Right. They don't like government. That's absolutely correct. In this case, when you're talking about arms control, we're talking about something pretty darn serious. We were also expecting a Surgeon General who has minimal power, really, has a bully pulpit, but nevertheless has minimal power. We were expecting him to be appointed over the recess. And it would be interesting to see whether the President might still try to do something like that. I mean, I don't know whether the President could still try and do a recess appointment, even though there's a pro. No, you can't do it. You can't stand up and say we're going to ignore a pro forma session of the Senate, can
well,
you?
Sort of like saying you can't change the meaning of a bill by attaching a signing statement to it. It hasn't stopped him.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Interesting.
That's what I'm thinking. Meantime, on a lighter note, I mean, not very much is going to go on between now and next week. On Tuesday, of course, we do have the pardoning of the Turkey president, Vice President, President Cheney, is going to be there. And so who knows what's going to happen to this thing. It may end up going to Guantanamo or anything could happen to it afterwards.
Turkey. Cheney is going to pardon it this year instead of Bush, huh?
Well, no, Cheney apparently is going to be at the ceremony, but I've got grave doubts about the Turkey because of this. I don't see any reason for Cheney to be there. They don't need two of them to pardon this thing.
Right. So maybe Bush will pardon him, and then Cheney will unpardon him, or maybe Bush will convict him, and Cheney will suspend it like he did with Scooter Libby, or...
you see, once you've been pardoned, the way the Constitution is set up now, you can pardon somebody, but then you can just be spirited off by Cheney.
That's right. Cheney could declare him an enemy combatant, Turkey.
Exactly.
And take him home for dinner.
Exactly.
Amazing. Victoria Jones, thanks so much, Victoria. And have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman Program, climate skeptic Mark Morano with James Inhofe's offices is going to try and convince me that the new climate bill is simply going to result in real economic pain for the poor and middle class and no climate gain. And Dr. Justin Frank, the psychiatrist who wrote Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of a President, He's going to be here to do some diagnosing on guess who? Plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People. And never forget, my friends, democracy and activism begin with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.